Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times and Dominic Fifield of The Guardian. The word from Manchester City is that Pep Guardiola is unsackable. No surprise there, then. With games against Arsenal and Chelsea to come in four hectic days, I suppose the question is, should he be doing better? What do you think, Jonathan?
He should. I mean, there's been signs with Pep that he's got these touches of genius that Manchester City spent 6-7 years trying to acquire. I think some of the attacking play has been terrific at times. He's got great ideas tactically. You can see the blueprint, fast players are great at one-on-one situations, possession game. But there's other basic things that are wrong with that City team. And I know he's new to English football, but there's some very obvious things that you'd expect a good coach to address that he's not addressing at the moment. It's going to be fascinating how it turns out, because he doesn't show any signs of curbing his own beliefs and romanticism, and I feel he's going to have to do some of that if he's going to succeed.
So that'll mean wholesale change, Dom. In that sense, are these games coming up, the Arsenal game and the Chelsea game, almost the ultimate audition for next season?
I don't know if you can say that, in as much as so many people will leave City in the summer. You know, so these guys who take to the pitch at Arsenal and Chelsea, a lot of them won't be there next season, so they're not auditioning for City as such. I mean, they've got four or five out of contract. Other players like Kolarov have got a year left. I mean, you can't see these guys having a future at City, even under Pep. So it sort of revolves around the back line, the full-backs, at least probably two centre-halves they probably need to add in the summer. Maybe a goalkeeper as well.
Defensive midfielder.
Defensive midfielder, yeah. Absolutely. We should probably be patient and judge, you know, Guardiola this time next year, when the additions he's made in the coming summer have had a chance to make an impact. I do think he should have done better with what he's got, and he should have recognised some of these flaws earlier and pushed for different signings in, but he's working with what he's got, and I don't think the stuff at the back, the players at the back, are good enough.
What about, how many do you think are on his shopping list? You know, there's a lot of talk about Danny Rose.
Yeah.
50 million, is that feasible?
Yeah. Well, it's feasible. City will bid 50 million. My goodness, they've paid 42 million for Mangala, and Rose is 74 times the player. But whether Spurs, even at 50 million, would sell, I'm not sure, because it's not really a seller's market anymore. You keep your good players. The concern for City, actually, is that given their transfer record, given what the Spanish executives have done so far in the market, is 200 million enough? And is 250 million enough? Because they're quite capable of squandering a degree of that money. I mean, I think when Pep arrived, he said to people he needed 10 signings. I think he's only had 5 so far. They've been at the front end of the pitch, so it's obvious the next ones are going to be at the back. But as I say, the amount of surgery needed and the money might not necessarily do it all for City unless they can improve that recruitment strategy.
Yeah, to that point, Isco has long been a favourite of Guardiola. Real Madrid are talking about offering him a 6-year contract. Are they likely to get him? Because you need players of that quality to make the statement that Guardiola requires.
Yeah, but he shouldn't be a priority. Mm. I mean, they've got so many good players. That's been the one thing that we've enjoyed watching City about this season. Their attacking play, even with Jesus in there as well, and they've been fantastic going forward.
There's more
forward.
Talk of like Kingsley Coman.
Well, yeah, I mean, great. I mean, he would fit the blueprint in terms of the long term as well. But he's not an urgent requirement. What they need, they're losing, what, Clichy, Sanya, Zabaleta at fullback out of contract, all gone. Centre-halves, just not good enough. You presume they're going to keep John Stones and stick with that, but they've got to add two centre-halves of proper quality alongside them. The goalkeeping situation has been farcical all season. Clearly Joe Hart has no future there. Caballero is probably a backup. Yeah. They need to address that. Claudio Bravo isn't good enough. Defensive midfielder, as you say. I mean, it's the type of thing that they could go... They could do worse than going back to Monaco and buying half their team. Mm. Although
that's probably
enough,
what's going to happen, though, isn't it? When you think of Mendy and
the weird thing is
and people
that
like that.
Monaco, in France, Monaco obviously recognises this great attacking team, but defensively they're not seen as all that. Mendy has had some fantastic games, but he's had some shockers as well.
Sidibe's the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's going to have to look properly out in the market and finding players that are going to be consistent and who are going to hit the ground running next season.
I mean, one thing I don't understand is, given how much surgery he needs, why then create problems for yourself by creating the goalkeeping situation? Just stick with Joe Hart. If that's something you want to do, do it somewhere down the line. I think the same with Yaya Toure, actually. I don't understand why he hasn't just been given another year's contract. That situation, I think, is broken now. I don't see him staying on, but Guardiola had to go back to him after trying to throw him out into the training with the kids at one point. You know, when there's so many other things that you need to do at your team, why take two really good established players and make problems out of them as well?
You could say the same for the Aguero situation. Aguero. Why rile that? I mean, he's a player, he's a world-class player. You don't want to be having to find another centre-forward for £150 million.
And he's also shown signs of showing respect by actually adapting his game.
And his record is still phenomenal. I mean, after that Monaco game, I was lucky enough to be there for the second leg. Guardiola walked into the press conference and refused to criticise his defence, which had been ripped to pieces at times, and said that actually the fault for the elimination was at the front end of the pitch. They didn't take enough chances. But the reality was, Aguero probably only had one or two chances in that second game and scored one of them. Oh no, Sane got the goal, didn't he?
But
he wasn't actually in the positions to register the goals. Yeah. It's the wide players who are missing these chances. Yeah. Aguero is such good quality, you can't afford to be losing him as well if you're going to have this massive, massive reshaping of your back line.
Yeah. So given all the weaknesses we tend to agree on, is this team capable of ruining another of Arsene Wenger's days?
Well, they are, because, you know, Arsenal are more flawed than Manchester City, and I think we saw in the last game between the two teams, you know, it summed them up. I think City were really open at the back, conceded early, but then Arsenal didn't have the mental capabilities to see out the game and collapsed. And I do think Arsenal have probably regressed since then. That was December. They've probably got worse. I would put City favourites for this game, flaws and all. It'll be a bit like City v Liverpool, which we saw the other week, which was two teams that are better going forward than they are anything else. But I think City are that much better than Arsenal that I would be surprised, actually, if Arsenal got a result.
It'll be a poisonous atmosphere, won't it?
It'll just be the usual Arsenal atmosphere, to be honest. Probably be planes flying over and all that.
Well, there's an exclusion zone. They can't do it. Thankfully.
It won't be a good atmosphere if Arsenal's form is maintained. It's been dismal for a while, and City potentially could run riot. I mean, they could if they clicked. They could rip them to pieces. But then you can never tell with Arsenal. I mean, this is about the time of season where, you know, that time of the year where they suddenly spark into life, and they're going to have to if they want to get into that back into that top four, because they're falling behind.
Worst run since April 95, when Stuart Houston was in charge. A lot of talk about Thierry Henry as an Arsenal manager in waiting. What do you make of that?
Oh, I find that remarkably premature, because Henry hasn't embarked on any kind of coaching career, and surely we know enough now about top level coaching in the modern world to know that you have to be a serious individual who served their time. Henry might have it in him, but, you know, that's 10 years down the line. If Arsenal really want to go and compete for the Premier League again and compete for Champions League, I think they need to change a manager, and I think they've got to go for the very best, just like they do with players. And just like that situation, it'll come down to what they're willing to spend. I mean, it's just this Arsenal stasis. Do they have the ambition to try and recruit one of the top managers if Wenger went. I'm not sure.
So we're beyond the evolution. It's got to be revolution, Don.
Yes. Well, I think ultimately it has to be yes, but I don't think Arsene Wenger will instigate revolution. No. He doesn't do that. So if he signs a new contract, whether it be 1 year or 2 years, I suspect that the team will continue to evolve slowly over that period, and then the revolution comes when, as you say, when there is a change of management. But the biggest shift at Arsenal this summer, on the assumption that Wenger is more likely to stay than go, will actually be if they fail to reach the top four and they don't have Champions League football next season. And in some ways, although that's sort of put up there as a disaster and, you know, catastrophe, whatever, it's not actually. It might actually kickstart a league challenge next year.
Because the money available from the Premier League is huge. Mm. Is it enough, though, for our top clubs to protect their top players? I'm thinking of Chelsea here.
Yeah.
Real Madrid have been coveting Courtois, Hazard.
Yeah.
Are Chelsea in a position to fight that off?
Well, Real Madrid, they kind of break any rules for you, don't they? So do Barcelona, because they have this romantic appeal for players that maybe supersedes money. I'm sure that Chelsea could financially make it worth Eden Hazard's while to stay and rival anything Real Madrid do. But, you know, the campaign for them getting Hazard started 2 or 3 years ago when Zinedine Zidane started talking about how great he was and playing on the heartstrings. And it's that problem, you know, when Real or Barca want you, it does tend to turn a player's head. But United did it with David De Gea, so it is possible for them. Hazard looks more happy than he has done for quite a long time, too. I think he'll be a Real Madrid player at some point, but I think this year maybe not. I think maybe that's still one for the future.
There's a lot of inevitable chatter about who Chelsea might take in return, almost like in a swap deal. Mm-hmm. Alvaro Morata's been spoken of.
Swap deals don't happen, though. No. They just don't. And Morata is a player that they came close to signing last summer, and I fully expect him to come in the summer again. I think Chelsea will probably end up signing two forwards, quite high-profile ones. I mean, Lukaku being the obvious other one. On the assumption that Diego Costa does move on, and to be honest, every time he goes off on international duty or even has a break, he just goes and tells all manner of media who he's going to join. It was three French clubs earlier this week. So look, they will strengthen. They will add in midfield as well. I think Bakayoko at Monaco is another player that I like. Mm. At the back, they'll bring in at least one more as well. Because they'll have to flesh out their squad in terms of quality ahead of the Champions League next year. It's a different, completely different type of campaign for Conte next season. And just on Hazard and Courtois, I agree with Johnny. I don't think there's any chance of either of those two ending up at the Bernabeu this summer. Maybe in the future at some point, but I would reckon that they'll both sign new contracts at Chelsea first.
Right. Almost don't need to ask this question, but do you expect them to get the title sooner rather than later?
Yeah, they've been so far better than everyone else. The performance level isn't dropping, and the rivals are playing each other. So yeah, I mean, it's a really bad reflection on the rest of the league that this could be wrapped up in record time. Maybe the earliest since United in 2000, possibly. Really bad reflection, because so much money and so much talent is at the other clubs, and Chelsea have put them to shame, I think.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. It reflects well on Conte, but it does reflect appallingly on the others. Mm. I don't really count Spurs in there, really.
No.
I think Arsenal, City, United, and even United have really let themselves down. Liverpool are evolving slowly, I think. It's been fantastic to watch what Conte has achieved and the progress he's instigated there, because I don't think even he really anticipated it being quite like this. I still think that there'll be one surprise result with Chelsea before the end of the season, but it won't affect them winning the title. That's theirs.
Mm. We spoke earlier about almost the big clubs competing for the same few elite players. We spoke about Manchester United. Griezmann, was it 14 goals this year so far?
Yeah.
£100 million, which wouldn't bother Man United at all.
I'd probably like it.
Would United's current status be attractive to a player like Griezmann?
Yeah, I think so. I think United still have a cachet that allows. But maybe, you know, when, what I said about Real Madrid and Barca probably applies to them, that it's irrelevant to where they are. They still have that cachet. I think they've got a fair chance of getting into the Champions League anyway through the Europa League route. They've been working on Griezmann for so long, and we've been talking about transfers and transfer planning with the likes of Arsenal and City. I think the lesson that Chelsea have given people is that you identify on targets and you work on these top transfers from a long, long way out. And United have been doing that with Griezmann. All the noises, all the things point to him being there. What else they do.
There's a human dimension to it, isn't there, Dom? Because, you know, he's close friends with Paul Pogba. You'd imagine that every time he gets an opportunity, it's come on over with me, chap.
Yeah, that'll come into it, I guess. They are tight. But then, if you believe the quotes, he doesn't like the thought of much the weather over here, particularly in Manchester. He is a player that's always played his professional football in Spain, isn't he?
Yeah.
It will be a bit of a contrast for him next year if he does come over. But that's by the by. I think he would fit in at Manchester United. He would be the new talisman to take up the reins from Zlatan in time, and he's obviously a quality player.
Weather never stops him signing, though, does it?
No, true.
Food and weather, they talk about it. Never stops.
The ink doesn't dry on the check, does it? What about United's current state? Mm. How far are they off being the team that Mourinho thinks he can produce?
Quite a way, I think, actually. In a funny way, I've been impressed with him being able to manage against type, because it's more the sort of physical profile of that United team than anything else. You know, we know Mourinho likes athleticism, power, strength, speed, and there's ageing players in that United team. Obviously, he brought one of them, but elsewhere, there's sort of slow, very un-Mourinho-like, but skillful, delicate players like your Juan Matas. It's a midfield that's just not a Mourinho midfield at all. So I think there's a lot for him to do, actually, to make it the kind of team that he wants. And it's interesting that Griezmann's been the focus of so much, because actually, I think for it to become a Mourinho team, what you'd expect is the likes of a Bakayoko from Monaco and other players of that type to come in and give him that platform. And that unless he really is serious about becoming a different manager, which I don't think he is.
Mm. What about James Rodriguez? You know, you look at him, and there's a lot of talk about linking him with Liverpool. Is there a United player in waiting?
I don't see it. James Rodriguez at the World Cup just seemed like a phenomenal talent that was destined to sort of light up the Bernabeu and be a player upon, you know, Colombia could hinge, everything could revolve around him for years to come. It's all gone a bit flat since then. I think if he came to England now, it would almost, I don't want to say damaged goods, but his reputation wouldn't be quite as seamless as he imagined it would have been. And I don't really see where he fits into the Premier League.
No, I agree with that.
I'm not sure he's got the physicality or the energy to his game. He's a nice player. He's obviously capable of great things, as we saw in Brazil, but I don't see him as a Premier League player in waiting, and the cost that he would, you know, come with him doesn't seem like a natural fit.
Mm. He doesn't work off the ball very much. No. You know, Ranieri had him at Monaco and really fought with him to try and put a shift in, which he did briefly, but that's been his issue at Real Madrid, so that's not a Premier League player.
Mm. You can't see him fitting in at Liverpool or a team like that where everybody's got to work.
And not at all.
That doesn't fit.
Mm. What about United? It looks like they've got the hardest running of the top six. Midweek, Wednesday week, they've got Everton and a BT Sport live game. That'll tell us a lot about them, won't it?
It will. They'll be put under a lot of pressure by Everton's intensity. And funnily enough, that, you know, they've got a little door is open to get them into the top four at the very time that they've got this bad fixture run. And they've got so many fixtures because of Europe. I think there'll come a point where Mourinho might just completely prioritise Europe to try and get in that Champions League spot. But at the moment, they've got to try and win those games. I just agree, Mike, you know, that Everton are one of the worst sort of possible teams for United to play at the moment with their intensity and youth and speed and so on. I think it could pose a problem for them.
Everton in a bit of a transitional period. You know, we spoke about Lukaku being touted for Chelsea. A lot of talk about Ross Barkley maybe even turning up at Tottenham. They can't afford to be seen as a selling club, can they?
No, I agree. I think it would send out completely the wrong message if they lost Lukaku in the summer. It's not what the new ownership would want out there. It's not the image that they would want. Mm. They should go out their way to make sure that Barkley's tied down to new terms. He can be a sort of icon of that club, a local lad made good. If they pursue a Wayne Rooney as well, then brilliant. I think actually that would... Whether he'd walk into the first team, I'm not sure, but I think having him around the place would be beneficial. And yeah, they are a club that's looking to progress. They're obviously the great news on the stadium front as well. But it's a key time for them. And it's strange with Ronald Koeman because he spent much of last summer trying to recruit players that were Premier League ready. And then obviously Schneiderlin comes in the mid-season and Lookman as well, who's obviously there for the future. He's got to balance how they progress next, because I do think if there's an impatience there, and there always is with Ronald Koeman, he will continue to buy in the 27-year-old, 28-year-old players that have done it at the Premier League, but they will come at a premium now. I mean, it really will come at a premium in the summer. So he's got to strike some kind of balance. And to be honest, I'd like Everton to get some kind of long-term commitment from the management as well to make sure that he doesn't suddenly disappear off, as he has been prone to do over his managerial career as well.
That tells you he is a short-term manager, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think Everton's idea is to go down the Spurs route to a certain extent. But, of course, what Spurs have got is the manager above all others in the Premier League that buys into the youth and the growing your own, the producing your own sort of identity. And of course Koeman is at odds with that. It is a club that's trying to jump at the moment to become a serious player again, which is why they're interested in Rooney, because they want to be seen to be, the new owner wants to be in that market.
But are you buying there a player or a DVD of past hits?
Well, you may be buying status as much as a player. I think that's what's in their minds. Koeman's not averse to the idea, because Koeman, as Dom said, is in a hurry. So he wants to make that jump as well. He wants top players and the mentality that they bring as well as what they bring on the pitch. But I think he's not against it, but he would need a bit of convincing. I think the owner would be right up for it, because it makes Everton sort of big again. I still think it's there for Rooney if he really wants it, but he's going to have to do better than he's done recently. He's going to have to be the old Rooney to justify it.
Isn't, though, Dom, opportunity hiding in plain sight here? Because David Unsworth is doing a great development job with that under-23 team. You know, the kids are coming in. We've had Tom Davis break through, Calvert-Lewin. Holgate, it looks like he's going to take over from Seamus Coleman. They've got a good youth system. Use it.
Yeah, they have, but they're now sort of in that position that a lot of, you know, elite clubs find themselves in, where they have a lot of very promising young players, but they also have an urgency to remain amongst that elite. In fact, it's worse with Everton, because they're trying to break into that, and there won't be a level of trust in those young players, certainly amongst the management. Yeah. It just won't be there. That these guys are obviously great talents for the future. But Everton need them now, they need them firing, they need to be able to rely on them now to get them into that top four, top five, top six. It's the same dilemma we confront with Chelsea and an academy team that just wipes the floor with everybody at youth team level virtually every year. And yet, how many of those guys actually break into the first team picture?
That's why it's so important keeping Lukaku and Barkley, because they're young players still as well. So if you want this young blueprint, you've got two that are actually top players already. You really need to... And it won't be for lack of trying, by the way, if they move, that Everton are trying, but it will be a real blow to that blueprint if they leave in a couple of sentences.
I mentioned Seamus Coleman's absence. Let's look back at that tackle by Neil Taylor. What about the notion that he's not that type of player? Should we be beyond that type of characterisation?
Yeah, we should. I just find it an irrelevant comment, actually, because, you know, you could say that my dog's never bit somebody until it does. You know, well, it's bit you now, so it is that type of dog. It's, you know, he's done that tackle. I remember, I'm an Aberdeen fan, and our Neil Simpson committed a dreadful foul on Ian Durant that more or less finished his career. Simpson had never done that in his life, but he did it. So whatever Neil Taylor's intentions were, I think are irrelevant. What is relevant was the temperature that was raised around that game, and you know, the impact that it's going to have on Seamus Coleman. And it shouldn't come into it whether he's a nice bloke or not that did the tackle.
Sort of born of the, it sort of feels as if it's born of the Roy Keane, Alfie Inga-Harland incident,
maybe.
Isn't it? And people can point, oh, Keane was that type of player. but you're right, it's utterly, utterly meaningless.
Isn't it?
I mean, it was, even, you can have a clumsy tackle,
yeah.
No intent, but it can still end someone's career.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in harsher punishment?
It's difficult. I think the contrast on this one is that most poignant because you've got Tyrone Mings getting a five-match ban for something which I don't think you can prove intent at all. It could have been an accident, and he's got five games. Neil Taylor will get three for something that's going to keep Coleman out for, what, six, 7 months?
At least.
At least. But I think it's impossible, really, to... You certainly can't have this... You can't have this thing where the player is banned whilst his victim is in rehabilitation. I mean, that doesn't that work at all. So I suppose the system is what it is, and it's probably the best thing we've got. Three matches at international level could take you out for 8 months,
yeah,
can't
it? Quite a lot, isn't it?
Mm. What about the... We're talking about intensity of combat, if you like, at club level. That's usually defined by a Merseyside derby, which we've got
on the
resumption. Who's got most to lose at Anfield on Saturday, Liverpool or Everton?
I think Liverpool, certainly. Everton are in kind of bonus territory this season. You know, they're doing great, really, compared to expectations. Liverpool are the team that have got it there. The top four has been there all season, and they haven't secured it without having the distraction of Europe and so on. We all know why they haven't, because they've lost too many games to the bottom teams in the league. And they have to win this one. It's, in a way, it almost feels like a free hit for Everton. They haven't won there since 1999 as well. So there's low expectation for them, and Liverpool have got a lot riding on it. Because, as I mentioned, Manchester United are the team that could take over from them in that top four. So, I think it's big for them.
Mm. In theory, though, Liverpool have got the best run-in of the lot. I think Everton are the last top seven opponent they've got.
But their problem, as you say, has always been what they do to teams in lower mid-table and beyond. You know, they can look attacking and enterprising at Manchester City and utterly, utterly gummy and toothless at Hull City. I mean, that's the team they are. It must be infuriating for Klopp.
I mean, they want intensity. That's Liverpool try to create intensity in a game so that they can win that game. And where they struggle is the smaller team that comes in and comes in to sit there and take the heat out of a game. That's where Liverpool are going to struggle. And they'll continue to, I think, this season, because they haven't quite got the right blend.
Mm, you know, Liverpool, their weaknesses were exposed earlier in the season at Bournemouth, weren't they? Now they're playing Bournemouth again in 9-10 days' time. Bournemouth have got Southampton again on the BT Sport game on Saturday. Is that a true derby?
It's a derby for Bournemouth fans, I think. I think if you ask them, whenever I've spoken to them about that particular fixture, they've been quite het up with it. I'm not sure the Southampton fans feel the same way. I think they probably gravitate more towards Portsmouth. But derbies have that. I mean, that happens all up and down the country, doesn't it? I mean, Charlton fans consider Crystal Palace a derby, but I don't think Palace fans do. It's one of those. It's a good fixture. An intense fixture, and Bournemouth have had that little revival now, haven't they?
They should be okay.
They should be fine. Those two wins have really helped them out. Also, the two performances have really helped them out, and all stemming from a fine point at Old Trafford, really.
Yeah, that's right.
And they can now work on making sure that some of those. That swathe of signings that Eddie Howe instigated last summer are now ready to kick on next season, because they haven't really kicked on this. That's been the one disappointment about Bournemouth. They spent an awful lot of money on those players, haven't really adapted adequately as yet, but I think Howe is convinced that in the long term they will work, and that next season they'll be a stronger team for what's happened this.
What do you think we've learned, Johnny, about Eddie Howe this season?
Well, we've learned that he's a young manager because he has made a few, I think, mistakes. Dom mentioned the signings. He's maybe signed too many wrong-profile players, but we've also learned how impressive he is. We knew that already, but some of the football he's played, the way he's handled the adversity, he's been very steadfast, very focused. You've seen his character, his grit there. He comes out of the season as a whole in the credit side. I just think maybe what we've learnt is that had maybe an Arsenal answered the call to install Eddie Howe last season, he might not quite have been ready for it. He's maybe still a year or two away from the top job, but the more I save him, the more I think he is on that trajectory.
Management, you know, as we know, is a fashion game, isn't it? What do you make of Pochettino being spotted in Barcelona? Coincidence?
Well, doesn't come across as a particularly naive person,
no.
Does he? So I suspect he probably knew exactly what he was doing. I think there is a friendship there, isn't there?
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if Pochettino, with his Espanyol connections, ever landed at Camp Nou in a managerial role. But I don't know. I think it does his reputation just to keep it out there that, you know, he is.
He's got friends in high places,
isn't he? Yeah. And you know, we'll keep Daniel Levy honest, and we'll see where that goes. Maybe we'll have Pochettino dressed in a suit, with a signing Pochettino in a tracksuit for a new contract. A nice photograph in the future, because it is one of those. He's done a wonderful job at Spurs and continues to do so. And that there is a club that's progressing. As the manager would want it to do, and he'll want to be in situ at Spurs in the new redeveloped stadium and benefiting from everything that stadium will bring.
Mm-hmm. Do you see Luke Shaw being part of that future?
I'd be surprised, in all honesty, but I'd be surprised in terms of where he is on the pitch. Not his profile, young English talent. Of course, it's what Spurs like.
He's still young, he's 21, isn't he?
He is, and you know, they're interested in Ross Barkley for similar reasons. But what I mean is, you know, he's nowhere near Danny Rose at the moment. I think he's gone backwards quite obviously from when he joined Manchester United. And if Spurs are looking at the next step, which is progressing to challenge for titles and so on, I'm just not sure that one makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. I think Luke Shaw probably needs to go back a further level and rebuild his career. I think he's been so far off at this last couple of years at United.
I agree on that. I think there were opportunities for Luke Shaw to join middle of the road Premier League clubs in January on loan, just to play regular football for 6 months.
Yeah.
And he wasn't keen.
Yeah.
And I think come the summer, if Jose Mourinho has made clear that he's not going to be first choice at Old Trafford, then he should swallow the bill basically and go.
He's one that, from a United point of view, they maybe need to look at a long loan rather than selling him. They maybe need to have a bit of faith in their own, what they saw in him originally. A bit like, I guess, Chelsea did with Victor Moses and gave him 3 or 4 years.
Spurs it for Danny Rose.
Exactly. So, you know, if you put Luke Shaw back to Southampton for 2 years, that might actually make sense, and then take him at 23 again.
Mm. And that will give them scope to actually plunder Southampton even more, won't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Always good.
What about at the weekend, it's Burnley Spurs. Be a lot of focus after the international break on Michael Keane.
Mm.
He really impressed there. Is he one of these players whose career will accelerate because of international exposure?
Possibly. I think his career was going to accelerate anyway. I'd be surprised if bigger clubs didn't come in for him in the summer, and regardless of the fact whether he played those two games with England. And that sounds harsh on Burnley, because I think Burnley have done a wonderful job with him and he's done brilliantly for them. And they've obviously had a fantastic season. But I actually wonder whether him getting that taste of international football might actually end up working against Burnley in some ways. You often see players going off with England squads, and even just being around players at elite clubs, chatting to them, you know, the next thing they know that they're agitating for moves elsewhere. And I think, I mean, Keane needed that drop to Burnley and to play regular games because after United. But he has proved that he is he's got proper quality, he's proper pedigree. And there will be clubs that try and do what Leicester did last summer and prize him away. It'd be whether, you know, Burnley are strong enough to resist.
Mm. I think we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't know a few managers maybe had a quiet word with some of their England internationals, said, just have a word and tell him how much we love him.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I think all of them now, I think he'll be knocking on his door, he'll be turning them away, yeah. I mean, he is a level-headed lad. He's a very... We spoke to him after the game in Germany. He's articulate, intelligent, nice lad. Had a good training, good apprenticeship. So I'd expect him to have a lot of choice in the summer and have a big decision to make, but he's got the intelligence and perspective to make the right decision. I think he'll almost have... Perhaps both Manchester clubs, Liverpool, maybe even a London choice in there as well. And it's where he'll develop best will be the next thing.
Mm. And I think, to take your point earlier, Dom, I think we've got to praise Sean Dyche for bringing him on. Do you think that, going forward, someone like Keane could evolve into the sort of defender that maybe almost John Stones has been touted as? Modern, great distribution... good on the ball, but also he's got that added dimension, what I would call the Sean Dyche dimension. He can kick it and head it.
Yeah. there was a moment in the game yesterday where he played the most glorious crossfield pass from deep out to the right wing.
And Walker controlled it fantastically.
Yeah, it was great. It was the build-up to the Lallana chance, right. Wasn't it? And
yeah.
There was a double take in the press box. I mean, this is going to sound bad, but it was like, oh, did John Stones play that pass? And then we look back on the replay. Oh no, it was Keane. It was Keane. And this is a player with that in his locker. He can do that. He's got the proper quality in there. He make mistakes. He made mistakes in Dortmund last week, which almost let in Sane. So look, it's part of a development path. But he has got something about him.
Yes.
And it's promising because it's not that long ago that we were worried about where the next England centre half was coming from.
Yeah.
And yet Keane has emerged this season as a regular in the Premier League who more than justifies his inclusion. There's Ben Gibson as well at Middlesbrough, we shouldn't forget. He's done equally well in a struggling team, but a team that's going to see Remini.
And also another one will be on the market in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without any danger.
Absolutely.
Who else has impressed you over the last week with England?
Well, Dele Alli continues to just look like a top player with so much ahead of him. You'd have to say Jermaine Defoe impresses you. Everything else off the pitch has been celebrated, but that enduring ability to sniff out a goal, move and finish with clarity.
He barely touched the ball before he scored, didn't he?
I think he had six touches, I read, or something like that. Yeah. And he won man of the match out of it, and that kind of almost sums up Jermaine Defoe. I thought Bertrand's had quite a good week, actually. Cemented himself as a proper option. And John Stones, John Stones is looks like he's starting to come through his rough times. So quite a lot of positives for England, but big glaring flaw for England, I think, central midfield, which we saw yesterday. Lack of quality, lack of creativity in there. I thought we saw that in Germany as well. And going forward, that's the worry for Gareth Southgate.
But he could have done something about that. I was so surprised that Barkley got no minutes in those two matches. I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain, for all that he had improved a bit at Arsenal in terms of playing, he played centrally, and he had a few games where you thought there's something about him there, but that was a bizarre selection. He could have played against Lithuania, he could have played Dyer sitting with Barkley closest to him. Yeah. I suppose Southgate looks at it and wonders whether he can have a team with Barkley, Lallana and Dele Alli in it, but I think that was an opportunity and he missed out, basically. I think Southgate would look back with some regret that he didn't give Barkley an opportunity in those games.
Mm. Overall, how do you think he's settling in as England manager, Johnny?
Yeah.
Modern, empathetic, call me Gareth, all that stuff.
Very good in terms of the tone, the culture, the things he wants to work on, But also, I think he's made, by and large, good decisions, sensible decisions. His substitutions were the right ones yesterday. That Defoe was the right pick. Michael Keane, his spot. I think England have gone forward under Southgate. Sam Allardyce, we don't know what would have happened, but that one game didn't make me think it was going to be a revolution or anything like that. And I think Roy Hodgson got very, very confused by the pressure of the job. So I think Gareth's brought some clarity to the decision-making. It's just, let's be careful about building it up as another Dawn for England, because, you know, we all know what happens when we do that. But encouraging signs.
Mm. What about the approach to the captaincy? I think that's great in terms of, let's just dismiss it as, you know, almost an irrelevance. Do you think he's set the tone in the right way there?
Yeah, I think he's taken some very brave decisions already. Yeah. The captaincy being one of them. The omission of Wayne Rooney, regardless of injury, but you could go back to Slovenia, where he didn't play. Omitting Theo Walker on the basis of some poor performances in the autumn, I thought was a good, brave decision. Southgate has spoken very well as well. He's been brutally honest with where England are. The stuff in the build-up to the Germany game where he was just saying, you know, this is a team that's won, three knockout matches in 20-odd years, 25 years, or something daft. I mean, if any other manager had said that, if Sam Allardyce had said that, even Rory Hodgson, I think it would have sent shockwaves around the game. I think in some ways Southgate suffers a bit because he is Gareth Southgate and he's not a big name manager. But everything he's said has hit the right note, I think, so far.
Well, he's off the system, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think I don't think that you have to be a top ex player to be a good manager. But I think we're actually seeing the benefits with Gareth, because he can speak about these past failings with real authority because he's been on the pitch, and he can connect with the young players in his squad because of that. And you're right, Mike, he's been part of the planning system that the FA have tried to have. So there's a lot of reason. He's got a lot in his locker that, let's say, Sam Allardyce and Roy Hodgson didn't, that he's bringing the job.
Because that experience as a past player, you know, I've spoken to him about the fear factor, and he admitted that he felt it in the end at England level. Will that personal experience come in handy this time around?
You'd like to think so. He's probably got more experience of tournaments, even if we're talking about him being a UEFA observer, than anybody else in the setup, which is also another string to his bow, basically. I mean, there's a lot about him that makes sense in the role. And, you know, he has started promisingly, let's be honest. But the truer test will come. I think he, you know, everything about those two matches we've just seen was eminently predictable. Even the performance in Dortmund, which you just felt as if they looked good. They knew they were going to look good because they always look good when they play in Germany. OK, they lost this time, but that in itself felt sort of vaguely typical. Yeah. You know, play very well, lose to the Germans. And then Lithuania at home, it was just a stereotypical England qualifier. At Wembley, win the game comfortably, not entirely impressively, but then acknowledge the flaws and talk about, you know, developing and progressing. And hopefully now we're on the right path. I've liked what I've seen so far.
But that does beg the final question, really. You know, the Premier League's going to come back, and it'll come back with a bang. The fixtures have guaranteed that pretty much, haven't they? Where does that leave international football?
Well, I know my sports editor is doing cartwheels because the Premier League's back. I think we'll suffer from the news vacuum. I think international football is where it is. It's more than ever tournament-based in terms of public interest. And I think they need to reform the qualifying system. I don't think they're going to either, but ideally they would just take out some of the less relevant games, shall we say, and give it an edge. I think what England have done well recently is at least have proper, meaningful friendlies, so that we don't have two kind of dreary games in a cycle like this. But thank goodness this last international break's over from a newspaper point of view.
You agree with that, Dom?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it gets to me in the autumn in particular, where you want the momentum going in the domestic competition, and it's just the interruptions are constant. There are three interruptions usually with international football, but I can't see it changing. I'd love there to be a summer qualification tournament where you just, every other year, you qualify, you play, you might be a group of five, you play four matches, and that is a problem. Your qualification for a major finals hinges upon that, but it won't happen. And England wouldn't ever qualify.
Well, there are too many turgid qualifying matches, not enough quality. No wonder the club game is the only game in town. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.